The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
My dear friends, welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am the agent for truth, Joe Bannister, your host. Happy Saturday morning to you. Freedom Above Fortune radio show comes to you courtesy of Frank Talk 104.3 FM, as well as worldwide on the internet, courtesy of Liberty Works Radio Network. Tell your friends they can listen to this great network and support it by visiting lwrn.net. Liberty Works Radio Network brings you radio programming you will not hear anywhere else. As always, I ask you to support the network so that this kind of radio programming can continue. When you visit lwrn.net, don't forget to click on the Join Donate button in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage. Given the many blessings God has bestowed on our country, I dedicate every show to our Father in Heaven, so I always start the show by praying as Jesus instructed us in Matthew chapter 6. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we forgive our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Well, you know and I know that our country is in deep trouble, and I urge everyone to fervently pray for God's blessings on our country. Let's redouble our efforts to obey his commandments, especially refraining from taking the Lord's name in vain. I also invite you to join my email list. You can go to freedomabovefortune.com and click on mailing list on the left-hand side of the homepage. You can also visit agentfortruth.com for more information about me and my work. And we're inviting callers to call into the show this morning. And the number is 410-848-9191. That's 410-848-9191. Well, briefly, for benefit of new listeners, I'm a former special agent with the IRS Criminal Investigation Division. I no longer work for the IRS because during the last 2 years of my service at the agency, I performed an off-duty investigation into claims that the income tax laws did not actually require most Americans to file federal income tax returns and pay federal income tax, and that the IRS was actually deceiving the American public about their true income tax obligations. After gathering and analyzing a mountain of documents and other evidence, I concluded that these claims about the federal income tax system were largely true. And when I asked my IRS supervisors to discuss my conclusions with me, they not only refused to have any discussions with me, but they also encouraged me to resign from the agency. So my IRS career came to an end rather abruptly in 1999 when I did resign from the Internal Revenue Service, and I've been speaking about my experiences and conclusions regarding the federal income tax and other constitutional liberty-related matters ever since. I'm featured in a film called America, Freedom to Fascism, a film that takes a provocative look at the Federal Reserve and federal income tax systems. I highly recommend watching the film as soon as possible. You can type in America, Freedom to Fascism into any search engine. You can go to freedomtofascism.com also and order a copy. Well, I'm pleased to have a returning guest, attorney Larry Becraft. Larry, are you with us?
I am, Joe. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing great, doing great. Good to hear your voice.
Same here.
Well, I thought what we could do is, you know, you've come on the show now and then, but I thought it'd be good to start out with a little bit of an introductory discussion about the income tax, but primarily, I've known you for many years now, and you've known me, and we're a couple of people that have had questions about the way that the IRS administers and enforces the income tax, and we've encountered, thousands, at least a piece, of other Americans, and we're aware of, millions more. Why do you think, with all of your experience as an attorney, as just a human being, an American, can you explain to the listeners why is this keep coming up? Why do Americans seem to have these questions about the income tax? And maybe by talking about the history of the IRS and the history of the income tax and history of taxation in general in this country, you can give the listeners a better idea of, why these
Exists and why there are real questions about the income tax.
Exactly. Now, if you think you could answer that question?
Yeah, and it's going to be kind of a long answer, but let me get started. In 1789, the United States Constitution was adopted. And since that time, you've had quite a number of states, all the states, have enacted state constitutions. And the whole purpose of government is to protect the rights of the people. And that applies to both the federal level as well as at the state level. One of the most important rights that I think every American has is this right to work. And if you think about it, if society had no government, everybody would have the absolute right to go out and try to survive and make a living for himself. The mere fact that we've come along and created governments that are to protect those rights, it doesn't mean that those rights have gone away. And in fact, the exact opposite prevails. Government exists to protect our rights. And one of the most important rights of every human being, besides the right to live and the right to breathe and the right to, travel, the rights to petition the government for redress of grievances, the right to, keep and bear arms, the right to freely speak. One of the most fundamental but, unappreciated rights of the American people is just the simple right to work. And with the right to work, that includes, the right to, of course, you don't have to work. You could live off the government dole. But most people choose to go out and exercise their constitutional, natural, inalienable right to work. And that is something that is protected by state constitutions and the federal constitution. When you sit down and catalog the cases that speak and address on the right to work, there are just tons of them. And if you want to read some of those cases, let me just point you in the direction of the Truth Attack Law Library. Now, the Truth Attack is an organization that is chaired by a man by the name of Tommy Crier, he's a lawyer from Shreveport, Louisiana. He made a decision years ago to stand up for his rights, chose not to file income tax returns, and he was ultimately prosecuted, but he was acquitted. And since his acquittal, he started an organization known as Truth Attack. Now, the way to get over the Truth Attack Law Library is to simply get into a search engine. I think the URL is just truthattack.org or truthattack.com, but, just do a search engine search. Truth Attack is the search term, and links will come up. And you can go over to the Truth Attack website, and there's a little, kind of at the center of the top of the page, there's a little link to the law library. And when you get into the law library, there's subcategories. Go over to, there's primary sources of law, and then there's fundamental rights, and click on that fundamental rights file, and you'll pull up a page that had just a quotes from a wide variety of cases all across the country where the right to work is protected. So if the right to work is protected, Joe, then how in the world do you come along and pass an income tax and include within the term income that which is constitutionally protected? Now, a lot of people, when they sit down and start taking a look at the tax laws, if you start off, there's a history to the tax laws. Let me briefly mention that history. And, of course, you can, on the Truth Attack website, you can go into the primary the link in the law library called Primary Sources of Law and pull up all these statutes and these regulations. But the what everybody in the world deals with today in reference to the income tax is this thing we know as the 1986 Internal Revenue Code. But when you take a look at the law that created the 1986 Internal Revenue Code, you know, when you're sitting down and taking a look at the statute, it just simply says, hey, we hereby change the name of the 1954 code, the Internal Revenue Code, to the 1986 code. So the code itself that we currently use is just a product of a name change, and it's equal to what was then in effect in 1986, known as the 1954 Internal Revenue Code. Well, when you go back to August of 1954 in the United States statutes large, you find that Congress enacted the 1954 code. Well, what is the 1954 code? Well, we had the very first time that the laws regarding federal taxes were put into one book. That happened in 1939. I'll talk about it in a minute. But let me go ahead and address that. In 1939, you had a number of federal taxes that were scattered across a whole bunch of volumes of the statutes at large. You know, there was stuff that was enacted in 1926, and there was taxes enacted in 1935, 1932. So in 1939, Congress said, well, look, let's just put all of the existing tax laws into one book. You know, we'll call it a title. And that's what was done in 1939. Well, by 1954, they're wanting to change the structure of that code. So what they did is they cut apart the 1939 Internal Revenue Code, cut the sections up, and then cut the sections into the subsections. And, you know, imagine doing that, cutting apart the 1939 code, then shuffling it like a deck of cards and reorganizing the 1939 code and calling it the 1954 code. And even though there were things that were substantive in nature, in appearance, like the Section 22 of the 1939 Code, which was the statutory definition of gross income, that went into Section 61 of the 1954 Code with word changes, although Congress comes along and says, well, it means the same thing as the 39 Code provisions. Well, the 1939 Code, which was simply the codification of all of the laws, the income tax was based upon and drawn from the 1938 Income Tax Act. Well, the 38 Act was simply a tax that was in lieu of the one that they had imposed in 1936. But when you go back to the 1936 income tax, you'll find that it was in lieu of the 1934 tax. Then when you go back to the 1934 tax, it was in lieu of the 1932 tax. And when you go back to the 1932 tax, it was in lieu of the 1928 tax. When you go back to the 1928 tax, you go back to, you'll find out it was in lieu of the 1926 tax. 26 was in lieu of 24, 24 was in lieu of 21, 21 was in lieu of the Revenue Act of 1918. Revenue Act of 1918 was a tax imposed in lieu of the 1916 and 1917 tax. So, this thing has evolved over time.
In lieu, as opposed to repeal, maybe you could explain to the listeners when you say in lieu of how that compares to having repealed the law.
Well, okay. Here's what happened. Let me give you a short constitutional history. In 1894, Congress came along and adopted an income tax, started enforcing it. Well, there was a man by the name of Pollock. He sued Farmers Loan and Trust, a bank in which he had interest, probably stocks or bonds. And he sued to challenge the constitutionality of the 1894 Act, and that went before the Supreme Court. So here you have a stockholder in Farmers Loan and Trust suing and challenging the constitutionality of the 1894 income tax. Well, that went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court, in essence, held that the 1894 Act was unconstitutional. The Constitution requires that direct taxes be apportioned and indirect taxes be uniform, which is something like, when you look into state constitutions, there are certain rules for the imposition of taxes. And we have rules at the federal level in our Constitution.
Sorry, we have a little break coming
up here. No problem.
Our guest is attorney Larry Becraft, and he's walking us through this this morass that's become the Internal Revenue Service and income tax of today. Our call-in number, 410-848-9191, 410-848-9191. See you after the break.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything, boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to them about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
There's a reason education's because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. It's the big, wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table and figure out how badly they get by a system that threw them overboard. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your retirement money. They want it back so they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Any way that you kill somebody when they're innocent and defenseless is detestable.
My biological mother was 7.5 months pregnant when she had a saline abortion, which was meant to burn me both inside and out. And the doctors have also said that I should be blind and all of these horrendous things. Praise the Lord, the abortionist was not on duty the moment that I came into the world. Praise the Lord, the abortionist was not on duty the moment that I came into the world. I was actually delivered in an abortion clinic. Had he been there at the time, he could have ended my life with strangulation, suffocation, or leaving me there to die. But a nurse called an ambulance and had me transferred to a hospital. Had he been there at the time, he could have ended my life with strangulation, suffocation, or leaving me there to die. So then I was placed in the incubator, weighing 2 pounds, and they said I would die. And yet I just kept on living.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Determination. Pass it on. Brooke Ellison is a surprising person.
When I was 11 years old, I was hit by a car, and no one expected me to live.
She surprised people by living.
I have been paralyzed from the neck down and on a ventilator since that time.
And she surprised them by going to college.
Tomorrow, I will graduate from Harvard.
Determination. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Our guest is attorney Larry Beecraft, and he is courteously sharing his storehouse of knowledge with us about the history of the income tax. And before the break, Larry, we were talking about the Pollock case, and we had to interrupt you for the break. So
it's real easy to pick up from there, Joe.
Excellent. Well, please do.
The Pollock case, you know, was one where the Supreme Court enforced the provisions of the Constitution regarding the imposition, you know, one of the regulations, one of the restrictions the Constitution imposes on the two types of Congress, two types of taxes that Congress can enact. It can enact direct taxes, but it must, those taxes have to be uniform. In reference to, excise taxes have to be uniform, direct taxes have to be apportioned. And apportionment is basically this, Joe. Let's presume that Congress, you remember a couple of years ago when there was talk about having or buying some new presidential helicopters? Do you remember that?
Yes.
Do you remember the price for helicopters for the president?
It was significant.
Oh, yes. Maybe a couple of billion dollars. Well, let's presume that Congress wants to finance the acquisition of one helicopter for $1 billion and raise the money by means of an apportioned direct tax. Well, here's what the tax would say. You know, Congress would enact, they would say this $1 billion is hereby imposed, and it's divided up into 535 different, you know, they divide it by the number of 535. Your state will pay an amount equal to your proportional representation in Congress. So if Congress, if California has 10% of the population of the United States, it'll have 10% of the representatives in Congress. California will then pay 10% of a direct tax. And in this situation, to buy the helicopters, Congress would impose a tax on California equal to $100 billion. Now, these are rough estimates. You know, I don't know what the California's representation in Congress, but for purposes of illustration, I'm using 10%. So to drift back to the Pollock case, the Supreme Court determined that, you know, the income tax imposed, the income imposed on real and personal property, was in essence a direct tax, and since Congress in that situation had only made the income tax subject to the excise tax rules, you know, uniformity, the Supreme Court said, "Hey, this act is unconstitutional." Well, it took almost 20 years for the Congress to get around to addressing that. In 1909, they proposed amending the Constitution. And the states were sent the proposed 16th Amendment. And, you know, the Constitution allows the Constitution to be amended by Congress proposing an amendment and sending it to the states. And if the states ratify the amendment, then the Constitution has been amended. And that's what happened with the 16th Amendment. If you ignore the facts that were dug up by Bill Benson in 1984, where he went to all of the state capitals, dug up information regarding how each state allegedly ratified the 16th Amendment, and came up with evidence that the 16th Amendment wasn't ratified. But let's ignore, for present purposes, that problem regarding the ratification of the 16th Amendment. Then, as soon as Flander Knox, and on February 25th, 1913, proposed that declared that the 16th Amendment had been ratified, Congress started to work on a new income tax. And in October 1913, you know, the Congress said, "Hey, here's a new income tax act." Well, immediately upon adoption of the 1913 income tax, there was a guy by the name of Bruce Shaber, who had apparently some stock in Union Pacific Railroad, just like Mr. Pollock sued Farmers Loan and Trust, Mr. Bruce Shaber came along and sued the Union Pacific Railroad. And he challenged the, you know, the constitutionality and scope of the 1913 income tax. Well, that case went to the Supreme Court. Now, here's what happened in the Bruce Shaber case. In 1894, Justice White was a new member of the Supreme Court. He wrote in the Pollock case a dissent. He said, hey, the income tax is an excise tax. And therefore, he argued that the 1894 Act was perfectly constitutional. Well, now, 20 years later, he is Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. So when the Bruce Shaber case came up before the Supreme Court, you know, here they're sitting, we all know that when you file a petition to the Supreme Court, hey, Supreme Court, take my case. You know, in conference, the Supreme Court justices are sitting there, and they're making a decision on what cases to take. And so White said, oh, gee, let's take this case of Bruce Shaber against the Union Pacific Railroad. And he made the decision, I am going to write that decision. And so he did. And what he, in essence, concluded in early 1916, when the decision in Bruce Shaber against Union Pacific Railroad came out, he made the decision that he made regarding the issues that were raised in that Bruce Shaber case. He said the Constitution wasn't amended by the 16th Amendment, and therefore it didn't change any requirement that direct taxes, the rule regarding the imposition of direct taxes, wasn't changed by means of the 16th Amendment. In essence, what the decision in the Bruce Shaber case was this. The 16th Amendment altered the Constitution in no way, shape, manner, or form. All it simply says is that any income tax that Congress adopts must fall within the constitutional classification of being an excise tax. And excise taxes can be imposed, you know, just simply if they are uniform across the country. So if you sit down and take a look at what was going on back in 1913 when the 16th Amendment was proposed, a lot of people thought, the 16th Amendment changes the Constitution, you know, in this respect, that this one direct tax known as the income tax, it can now be imposed without constitutional restrictions. Well, Justice White came along and said, no way, Jose. If you take a look at the briefs that were submitted to the Supreme Court in the Bruce Shaber case, the essence of all of the arguments, everybody appearing before the government on both sides, including the government, says, the 16th Amendment eliminates the requirement to apportion the income tax. And Justice White said, no way, Jose. All it simply does is doesn't amend the provisions requiring apportionment for direct taxes. It just simply declares that any income tax that Congress enacts has to be an excise tax. And so, therefore, if an income tax happens to be a direct tax, it's unconstitutional. The only income taxes at the federal level that are constitutional are those that would inherently be excise taxes anyway. Now, Joe, you and I have been up to archives in Washington, D.C. I have spent quite, months in College Park, going through National Archives, digging into all sorts of historical data, particularly around that 1916 era. And you have done so as well. You have been through the congressional record. Do you think that there was an effort by Congress to conceal their reaction to the Bruce Shaber case?
There was. I would almost call it, it seems like collusion to me, but they basically had, there was evidence in the record of a secret meeting that was closed to the public.
Yeah, they didn't want to know what kind of things that they were cooking up in reference to the income tax. But here's what happened. As a result, direct result of the Bruce Shaber case, Congress came along when they enacted the 1916 Income Tax Act. You know, they repealed the 1913 Act. And when you sit down and take a look at the differences between the 1916 Act and the 1913 Act, there are big differences. You know, there's a big difference just in the section that imposed the tax. Decidedly different from the 1913 Act. Now, the 1916 Act imposed a tax, and the following year, during World War One, the Revenue Act of 1917 came out, and it, you know, kind of basically changed the rates of taxation. And then in 1918, Congress comes along and passes the, or in 1919, Congress passes the Revenue Act of 1918, and it simply says, well, the tax imposed in 1916 and 1917 are continued forward. But we're kind of amending, you know, certain provisions of the Income Tax Act. So the 1918 Act was in lieu of the tax that was imposed in 1916 as amended by 1917 Act. And that begins this process of every couple of years, Congress comes along and says, oh, in lieu of the previous tax, we hereby impose this tax. The subject of the tax remains the same. But, you know, they build upon, you know, they make changes in certain features, and, you know, they increase the tax rates, and that's the way the income tax operates. Now, this we have gotten into the history of the income tax, and we've dealt some discussed a little bit of the constitutional litigation regarding the income tax, all to just simply address the question that you asked. What was it? Maybe about 20 minutes ago. You know, are there any real questions regarding the income tax? Of course there are. Now, we started off this conversation talking about the right to work. Has the right to work been affected by the income tax? Well, you have, starting in 1918, when you take a look at the regulations that relate to the income tax, there's always this little phrase that you will find. You know, they started off, you know, in reference to the section that would define, you know, gross income, you know, suddenly there crops up, you know, this little phrase, you know, the income tax is not imposed upon what would arguably be income if it's exempt pursuant to the Constitution. Now, you've seen that type of language, have you not, Joe?
Yes, I have.
Okay, well, you starting off with the Revenue Act of 1918, suddenly you have this notation in the regulations, oh, there's some kind of income that can't be taxed anyway. There's a recognition in the regulations. You know, so by the time you get up into the 30s, you know, these regulations for all of these income tax acts, they always say something like, they mention that there is something that is exempt pursuant to fundamental law. There is something that is exempt pursuant to the Constitution. Now, Joe, I have pulled up. I just happened to pull up here on my computer during the course of this program. I'm looking at the 2003 version of the federal income tax regulations, and I'm looking at a regulation under Section 265 of the Internal Revenue Code. And, you know, there's this. Let me read the language. Subparagraph B, exempt income and non-exempt income. And you'll find in this particular regulation is talking about that income which is wholly excluded from gross income under any provision of Subtitle A, or is wholly exempt from the taxes imposed by Subtitle A under the provisions of any other law. As used in this section, the term non-exempt incomes means any income which is required to be included in gross income. And therein you find an acknowledgement, you know, even currently, that there is some type of income that is completely exempt. And that is one of the reasons why people who sit down and study the income tax laws, they sit there and take a look at, you know, odd features in it. And, you know, of course, the people that don't have inquiring minds, you know, they don't look at this stuff. But there are a lot of people that are sitting there and saying, hey, look, you know, gee, I'm surrendering, you know, 25 to 30% of my wealth every year, all that I make, which amounts to big bucks. And, you know, they sit down and start taking a look at the law, and gee, is it clear that what I make for working for a living is taxed? And they run across provisions like this, and these raise real questions.
That is for sure. Anyway, we've got a break coming up. Our guest is attorney Larry DeCraft. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. FreedomAboveFortune.com, AgentForTruth.com. Call-in number 410-848-9191. See you after the break.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It's not easy being a veteran.
Coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan, not everyone understands that.
You don't feel the same.
Join us at communityofveterans.org
and connect to others who are going through the same thing.
Because no one knows what it's like to come back unless they were there.
Brought to you by Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America.
I know what you're going through.
I've been there.
Several months ago, I watched as Sarah Palin delivered an inspiring speech to the nation, and I was proud to be a conservative. Today's celebration reminds me of just how blessed I am to be an American. When I was given the opportunity to compete in the Tropicana Speech Contest, I knew that I would write about something dear to me, my freedom. My speech is entitled America's Freedom and is dedicated to my great-grandmother Leth, who recently passed away at the age of 95. What do you think about when I say the word freedom? Some think about America being a free country, and others just think about having rights and being free. You probably think this speech is about freedom, but no. It is about how Americans are slowly losing their freedoms. My parents have taught me to love my country, and I appreciate the blood that was shed for our freedom. From the beaches of Normandy to the sands of Iraq, Americans have paid a great price so we could live free. Sadly, many among us just don't seem to care about the sacrifice it took to build this great nation. It seems as though we are more interested in our own pleasures than preserving our independence and liberties. Truth is, there's many who want to change our way of life, who don't respect the great traditions of America. These are the same people who support the growing attack upon our private property in the name of environmental protection, or the recent talk of limiting free speech with the Fairness Doctrine. Now, there's a twist for you. How can it be fair if the people don't get to choose for themselves? Where is the freedom in that? There are those who continually attempt to shoot down our right to bear arms promised by the Second Amendment. On a personal level, we've seen independence, self-reliance, and individual responsibility replaced with complacency and apathy. Today, many of our schools don't teach the values and patriotic pride that my parents were taught just a few years ago. Yeah, a price may have been paid on the battlefield, but the war is far from over. If we don't act now, before it's too late, we won't have any freedoms left, and America will no longer be the America we know and love. John Adams said it best when he wrote, "A constitution of government, once changed from freedom, can never be restored. Liberty once lost is lost forever." I believe we have a patriotic responsibility to stand up to those who seek to destroy these constitutional freedoms. If you believe in the values and principles that made this nation great, and if you enjoy the freedoms we have as Americans, then join me. Join me in standing up to those who seek to destroy these freedoms. Join me in taking back this great nation and protecting our independence and liberties. Because you can make a difference. I can make a difference, and together we will make a difference. Thank you, and God bless.
Did you know that no Christian church accepted contraception as morally permissible before 1930? Discover why and how to work with a woman's natural times of being fertile and infertile. Learn a 99% effective method of natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study. Search for a class at the Couple to Couple League's website, ccli.org, or call 800-745-8252.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America. Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, freedomabovefortune.com and agentfortruth.com. Call-in number, 410-848-9191. That's 410-848-9191. Our guest is Larry Beecraft. He's been courteous and kind enough to join us for both hours of the show because, you know, these topics tend to have some detail to them, and it's nice to be able to take the time and, you know, get into the nitty-gritty details. One of the things the IRS doesn't like people to do. But before the break, Larry was talking about Section 265 and out of the 2003 tax regs, regulations, regs for short, and that the regulation writers from the Secretary of the Treasury was describing non-exempt, wholly excluded, wholly exempt income, correct, Larry?
That is correct, Joe. Now, let's move beyond that. You know, there's one under Section 312 of the code. You know, it mentions, you know, that there is income that is fundamentally exempt pursuant to the Constitution. But now let's descend to a particular matter. Joe, you know, compensation for labor, in my view, and this is based on, you know, this isn't a wild idea on my part. This appears in the regulations. But compensation for labor and compensation for services are two different things. Let's deal with, you know, what you would think is the inherent quality of income. If you go out and you surrender, you know, like if you have a car and you bought a car a couple of months ago for $4,000, and you then drive it around for a couple of months and decide to sell it, and you sell it for $4,000, Joe, how much of that $4,000 is income?
Zero.
Zero, okay. Well, let's say that you hold it for a couple of months and, you know, put it on the market, and lo and behold, you know, you've got a Toyota, and suddenly because of the events over in Japan, Toyotas now have appreciated. And, you know, there's even for used Toyotas, people are willing to pay more money. And let's suppose after you've held it for 3 or 4 months, you put it on the market, and lo and behold, the car that you bought for $4,000, you can now sell for $6,000. How much of that $6,000 is income, Joe?
Potentially $2,000.
Right, right. Now, you know, if you go out into the, you know, if you work for a living, you surrender your labor and you get paid for it. And a lot of people have made an argument about the equal exchange. You know, they surrender their labor, they have lost some of their own property, and they have just been compensated for that, so to speak, although compensation for services is a very unique legal term. But a lot of people make the argument that, well, gee, I have 100% basis in my labor, and what I get from my labor results in no profit. It's like selling the car, you buy it for $4,000, you sell it for $4,000, there's no profit or gain, which is the inherent quality of income. Now, Joe, let's go ahead and consider something else. Let's say that, you know, bearing in mind this concept of swapping your labor for money, let's say that you work for somebody and this company gives you are allowed to take off 2 weeks during the year, you can be on vacation, and yet you are still paid your salary. In that circumstance, have you surrendered any labor in order to acquire that money that's, in essence, vacation pay?
No, you have not.
Okay. Now, let's say that one of the benefits of working for this company is not only do they give you 2 weeks paid vacation, but they also give you, you know, a year, I mean, not a year, a week for every year for sick leave. Now, let's say that you use up your sick leave, but during your sick leave, you still receive your same old salary. Joe, have you, when you receive sick leave, have you surrendered your labor to get what you were paid?
No, you haven't.
Okay. Well, let's say also, let's take the situation for, let's say that there's a management type guy. You know, he's pretty important for a company. And when he signed the contract to work for the company, you know, it was decided that after he left the company, whenever that might be, the company would pay him a severance package. Let's say that, you know, after he works 10 years, you know, if he leaves the employment of this company, he's paid $50,000. Has he surrendered any labor in order to get that $50,000?
No, he hasn't.
Okay. Now, let's go a step further. You're working for a company, and they promise that after 20 or 30 years of service, you will get a retirement benefit. And let's say that after you hit the a right old age, you do retire, and the company keeps on paying you a retirement benefit. Have you surrendered any labor in order to get the retirement benefits?
No, not there either.
All right. Well, do you know that when you sit down and you take a look at the regulations under Section 61 of the present Internal Revenue Code, you know, those things are very, you know, vacation pay, dismissal pay, sick leave, unemployment compensation, retirement benefits. Those are the things that are discussed, you know, even mileage. All of that is transportation provided by the employer. All these little fringe benefits are discussed in excruciating detail in the regulations. Now, Joe, when you take a look at Section 61 of the Internal Revenue Code, it says gross income means all income, including the following items. What is the first one that they mention right under in Section 61, the first item of income that's discussed there?
I believe it's compensation for services.
Really? Really? Do you know how, you know, do you think, Joe, that when the phrase compensation for personal services or compensation for services, you know, that's not some alien phrase that has an ambiguous meaning. It appears in all the old tax acts. Do you think that back in, let's say, let's pick a year, 1921, you know, Congress sits there and one of the income tax acts sits there and says compensation for personal services. Do you think that phrase would be undefined?
I kind of doubt it, because as you said about excruciating detail,
right.
Terms are defined, and they go to great lengths to define all these various legal terms.
Well, when you sit down and take a look, you know, I'm sitting here in front of my computer because I got all these things kind of isolated, and I'm looking at the Regulations 86, which would be for, I think, the 1934 Act. And here is a definition of compensation for personal services that appears in the old regs. And this is something that, you know, you can trace back. You know, this basic phrase appears in all of them. Compensation for personal services is commissions paid salesmen, compensation for services on the basis of a percentage of profits, commissions on insurance premiums, tips, pay of persons in the military or naval forces, retired pay of federal and other officers, and pensions or retiring allowances paid by private persons or by the United States are income to the recipients. And that's in the definition of compensation for personal services. Now, did you see in there, you know, anything that mentioned compensation for labor?
You know, those kinds of items like you were talking about before, you know, vacation, sick, any kind of activity where you didn't surrender any of your labor first in order to get that benefit.
Right. So what you have, Joe, you know, here you have these odd features, you know, to get back to the original question that you mentioned, we started off the program, when you're sitting down and tracing, you know, the phraseology appearing in the old tax acts. When you're looking at, you know, each of these old tax acts, you know, as soon as they were enacted, you know, the Bureau of Internal Revenue or the Internal Revenue Service would come along. You know, they had the statutory authority to publish regulations. And these regulations would inform the public of what the position of the service, the Bureau of Internal Revenue, or the Internal Revenue Service, what it believed the law to be. You know, it was their interpretation. And so, you know, an act that's only about 40 pages long might have regulations that are 250 pages long. You know, they go into the detail about, you know, we think this means this, and we think this means that. And so those are the regulations. And when you sit there and you can follow throughout all these old regulations, a certain pattern, you know, it appears there. That pattern tells you about how they have constantly interpreted the income tax laws. And so when you sit down and here we are in 1939, statutory gross income was defined in Section 22 of the 1939 Internal Revenue Code. It said gross income means gains, profits, and income derived from wages, comma, salaries, comma, compensation for personal services. Now, Joe, when you see a phrase like that, wages, salaries, and compensation for personal services, are those words, those phrases, those terms, do they overlap? Do they mean the same thing? If compensation for services included wages, well, then why in the world did you have wages sitting there in the statutory definition? Can you explain
right,
that?
And that's that would be an evidence of statutory construction, right? Where the using different terms means that they mean different things, and that's the reason they have to list them separately as distinct,
correct,
you know, separate words and terms.
And so this compensation for personal services was, you know, in all the old acts, and it had a specific meaning. You know, what I just read off to you was the meaning of it in 1934, I think. And doesn't seem to include what the average American is making by working for a living. And then when you get up into 1954, where the Section 22 of the 39 Code went into Section 61, you know, the committee notes of Congress say, oh, these two things mean this exact same thing. And yet when you look at Section 61, you know, you've seen in the past that the there was this phrase, income derived from wages, salaries, and compensation for services. Now you have the wages and salaries that are omitted from the Section 61 definition. It just starts off with compensation for services, which most people will sit there and say, oh, well, you know, that includes what I make. But when you sit down and take a look at the history behind that phrase, there's something different there. Now, is that not a big gap?
Sure. And then also the derived from is critical legal language, right? Because the Supreme Court cases.
Income derived from wages would include such things as, you know, the sick leave, the vacation pay, the unemployment compensation, the retirement benefits, the dismissal, you know, compensation that you receive. That's derived from wages. So, you know, for people to sit there and say, you know, that the people in the tax movement have wild and crazy ideas. No, Joe, let me tell you what I think that the income tax is. It's written perfectly constitutional, and yet it's written in a deceptive fashion so that those that don't sit down and study the tax laws will reach conclusions that are incorrect. They will reach the conclusion that the income tax is broader than it legally is, and therefore they will pay this tax. And that is what, you know, to me, that is the best interpretation, you know, the overall picture you get when you sit down and study the income tax laws.
And obviously you've done a ton of research, and over the years you've shared a lot of it with me. All you're doing is going back, recognizing certain legal parameters. Well, actually, I guess we got this break, so I can't finish my thought. But when we come back after the break for the second hour, we'll talk a little more about that. Larry would also like to talk about some of the other ways that people, positions that people use in arguments, and the merits of those arguments and positions. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Call in 410-848-9191. See you after the break.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Well, buddy, that's a good question.
Is this worm a boy or a girl? Why are carrots orange?
Actually...
Dad, why don't you have any hair on your head?
How do birds fly?
Why is dirt brown?
Why can't I fly?
Why can't I fly?
Are we there yet?
You may not have all the answers, but if they're comfortable coming to you now when the questions are small, they'll come to you with the bigger questions later.
Dad, can I ask you something?
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
This is Randall Yearout on jurisdiction. When the U.S. territories applied for admission into the Union as states, the overarching principle that drove this decision was the desire to determine their own destinies and to be removed from what the U.S. Constitution calls the exclusive legislative jurisdiction of the Congress over the properties owned by the U.S. government. When what is now the state of Washington removed itself from this exclusive jurisdiction, it was required to write its own constitution, which would provide for a representative republican form of government for its citizens, such as the case for every state which joined our union. Today, our U.S. government officials and bureaucrats have lost sight of this fact, and now want to reassert exclusive legislative jurisdiction over the states and turn them into administrative subdivisions as though we were territories again. Sorry, U.S. government, but the Constitution says you don't have that authority. And Americans are beginning to realize that our founders intended for the individual states to either succeed or fail based on their own laws and policies. If the people don't like the way a particular state operates, they can move to another one where they do. The way our federal government operates today, the entire nation either succeeds or fails based on the policies of 535 legislators in Washington, D.C. And from what we can see from its history of failed social policies, I don't think these guys could pour sand out of a boot if the directions were written on the heel. We need to replace the socialist mindset in Washington, D.C. and our state governments with a restored American view of law and government.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
Anticipation for the upcoming, we have some breaking news. The White House is scrambling to do damage control after the president was caught lip-syncing a speech at the...
Providing quality, affordable health insurance in this country, our health care system that's sucking up all the money.
It was too bad because it happened right before he got to the part about how the power for change rests with every American. That's always my favorite part.
It's like, he's just gotten too big and this just shows that. You know? I mean, he hasn't really done anything good anyway.
The White House seemed to bungle their official response and released a statement claiming the incident was caused by a feedback problem that made it appear that the president's voice was out of time with the movement of his lips. German Chancellor Angela Merkel called Obama's performance disappointing. Network investigation uncovered an exclusive video which appears to show President Obama speaking without pre-recorded audio.
Now, some graduating classes have marched into this stadium in easy time, times of peace and stability. When we call on our graduates, simply to screw it up.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
He went without food, not to lose weight, but to help people lose generations of hate. While many around him rose up with violence, he sat down for peace. When others use religion as an excuse for war, he used it to remind them of love. Mahatma Gandhi made the world a far better place by reaching out with the strength he cultivated within his soul. So, pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
The viewpoints expressed on Liberty Works Radio Network are not necessarily those of the network, its affiliates, or sponsors. This is Liberty Works Radio Network. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I really appreciate you joining us here on this Saturday, as a special appreciation to my guest, attorney Larry Beecraft. During the first hour, Larry gave us a nice brief outline of the history of the federal income tax, and we got into something that should be near and dear to everyone's heart, every American certainly, but actually, these concepts of rights apply to all human beings, the right to work. And so Larry walked us through not only the history of the early 1900s with regard to the income tax, but got into specifics with Section 61, some of the regulation sections, and just the overall concept of your right to work, and whether or not you know, the IRS, the federal government, actually has the authority to tax it, and very compelling evidence to indicate that you're basically being lied to, or if not actively, basically passively deceived by the way that the laws and the publications are written, so that you will just presume by these descriptions that what you have to your name, what you've earned, is taxable. Larry, what I was going to say before the break at the end of the last hour was just, you know, is it a fair statement that, you know, your analysis comes from applying this legal doctrine called imperii materii, where you're looking at the tax laws as a whole, and actually, legally, that's what you're supposed to do.
Correct, Joe. And, you know, I've made it a personal project of my own, you know, just to provide all this information to the American people. You know, the Supreme Court does sit down and say, you know, when you're construing the tax laws, they have to be construed in pari materia with each other. That means that in the totality. You can't just take the income tax laws and look at just one, you know, like Section 61. You just can't look at it and ignore the history. You know, the Supreme Court says you got to take a look at the whole shooting match. Well, the whole shooting match, I have spent a tremendous amount of time putting together, and you can go over to the Truth Chat website in the law library, in the file called Primary Sources of Law, and you will find that I've got an explanation. I kind of tie it all together, and you can link to the tax acts and the regulations. It's all downloadable from that website. However, I do think it's real important for people to have, you know, the whole shooting match, you know, all the stuff that's construed in pari materia with each other. They can get it from you, Joe. You have that disc. So I would suggest to any listeners, if you want to get all this stuff on a disc and, you know, you put it on your hard drive and then you have all the little links there, they all work. You know, it's very, very handy. You know, that there's probably about 20,000 pages of materials that's on that disc that you have and you make available for sale for whatever contribution you're asking. Incidentally, Joe, what do you ask for a contribution for that disc?
$20. And
God, that's cheap!
It really is, because, you know, people, I tell them, you know, you'll get a disc one way or the other, but, you know, it'd be nice if you could contribute to the effort. And, you know, most people want to send a donation. Some people can't afford it, and they still get a disc. But it is just remarkable, on one little disc, the resources that you have available there. And my hat's off to you, Larry, for not only putting that together,
but providing it to me that I could distribute it to others. And I've had many people that have gotten a copy and have corresponded back to me and let me know that it's just phenomenal, the information that they can glean from there. So.
Well, I don't know until I put all that together. I never found anybody that had anything like that. What sounds like we have a caller from Albuquerque.
Yeah, Bob, welcome to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. What's your question or comment for Larry?
Hi. I'm enjoying your show very much. I'm getting a lot out of it. I had done some reading over the past years. I've actually read material by Mr. B. Kraft, and I've read some of your material, Joe. I work in the private sector. I'm a physician assistant. I work for a nonprofit hospital. And for 3 years, 05, 06, 07, I determined that the monies that I received for my services there, and of course I was compelled to sign the W-4 for withholding, I made a determination that my compensation was not taxable, so I filed for a refund, and of course I got back a frivolous penalty for three of those years, $5,000 apiece. And so this is extremely distressing. I'm not quite sure where I stand with this. Is this something that I should not have done? I'm a little bit confused because Larry had mentioned that if we are receiving money for vacation pay, et cetera, for we're getting benefits like insurance and so forth, that this constitutes income because it's a gain in profit derived from my wages. So I'm scratching my head. I'm going, well, should I have divided and separated my actual compensation for my labor and benefits, as such as unemployment benefits and things like that?
Well, I'd like to have Larry answer first. I certainly have a comment, but Larry, go ahead.
No, go ahead with yours, Joe.
I guess the sad thing, Bob, that I've certainly learned ever since I started to look into this a couple of years before I left the IRS is that we're definitely between a rock and a hard place because, this is the truth. I mean, it can be verified, validated, confirmed. Of course, I was able to do so. That's why I left the IRS. Larry was able to do so. That's why he's, very adamant about telling the truth about these things, regardless of what the judiciary or other attorneys might think of them. The problem is that the public at large, I mean, the ignorance, and I don't say that in a derogatory way, it's the lack of knowledge in the public, the businesses, the corporations, and then of course the fear. Even other issues that have nothing to do with tax, when you come and tell somebody something that's absolutely the truth, hey, black people are really okay, and they're somebody that's used to being a bigot or a racist, well, then they're not going to believe you. They're not going to practice it.
Right.
So with taxation, it's the same thing. This information is it's getting out there. It's percolating. People are even trying to implement it as best they can. But the problem is still, most recipients of this information are either fearful or they have their own, tax problems. And we always have the IRS that's ready and willing to harass anybody that wants to actually, abide by the law because the IRS doesn't abide by the law. So, my overall comment is just, all we can do is share this information, tell you we believe it's true. You check it out for yourself. How you implement it in your own life, I tell people all the time, you got to be prepared for not only some static and resistance, but actually, the IRS can come down on you like a ton of bricks. And I don't yet have a way to stop that other than to do these kinds of shows and give this information out and hope that enough Americans, wake up and demand that the taxation be implemented correctly and legally.
Well, in my defense, I've filed affidavits, and filed with the county clerks for all the world to see that I have not been involved in any taxable revenue taxable activity I'm in the private sector. I am out of the jurisdiction, meaning the federal zone, I believe. I've written back responses to their various CPE, computer paragraph letters and declarations of frivolousness. I've asked them specifically to identify what is frivolous about my return, and I will amend it. I will try to abide by the rules, by the laws, and I get no response. So this is something that I was hoping that maybe Larry would help address.
Well, let me address it in this fashion, and this is where you know, we get down to what should the people in the freedom movement actually do. You know, my personal opinion about the income tax is that it's perfectly constitutional. Right. There are monumental changes that happened back in 1916, and you know, the people inside the system, the ones that operate, the ones that are writing all this stuff, they understand that it's got to be constitutional.
Right.
However, if it's constitutional, it's going to have a very limited application. And the reason why they have engaged in deception, the deception is for that purpose, is to deceive an entire nation. You know, and the people inside the system say, well, you know, we need the money, even though it's constitutional, we drafted it constitutionally, and it has a limited scope to it. We want everybody. We need the money. And
right.
So they come along and enforce it, as if it applies to everybody. And, yeah, I've done enough in the way of digging around. You know, the Treasury likes to keep a firm grip on the information that would reveal how the income tax operates. But let me just tell you, the people at the top levels, they know. You know,
yeah.
There are people inside the system that know that. But they have also this objective, since they are, you know, people that, it's personal as to all of them. You know, they think of the income tax. You know, this is the reason why at Christmas time, when you go over to the Treasury Department, you can buy Christmas tree ornaments, you know, that memorialize the 16th Amendment. Can you imagine, you know, the 16th Amendment being the subject of a Christmas tree ornament?
Well,
that's true, you know. But, you know, they sit there and it's personal as to them because it represents their pay, their retirement, you know, and if you're coming along and talking about
to the coffers there,
yeah, they get a lot of money, and it's personal as to everybody that works for the federal government. Don't mess with the income tax, and
yeah.
So you know that's the attitude of a lot of people. There's an attitude of the professionals, the tax professionals in America. There's an attitude of people on our side. You know, people that are in the freedom movement. Everybody wants to limit their study to, in violation of this, what the Supreme Court says, is to construe all this stuff in pari materia with each other, and yet nobody wants to take a look at the history. And when you take a look at the history, you go back to that time, you can see the limited application, and what they have done over time is they just keep adding fluff to everything. You know, they hide it in plain sight, and they just add, you know, 50 pages more of, you know, discussions about anything and everything that's completely irrelevant, that serve only to, you know, conceal that which is out in broad, plain view for everyone. But in order to determine how something applies, boy, you got to do some digging. Now, withholding is something that people cannot understand until they get back into the history. But once you get back into the history of the income tax, you can absolutely see how it applies. It takes a whole lot of work to arrive at the proper application of withholding. But, you know, nobody wants to do that. It is because nobody wants to sit down and spend tons of time trying to understand the tax laws, and everybody is satisfied with only looking at what is they can see in the current code. That's the reason why, you know, if you get, you know, tax professionals and everybody else, they've all got this, you know, it's like we were discussing in the previous hour of this program. You know, when you're dealing with what is compensation for services? And, you know, the first thing that pops in everybody's mind, well, what I make from working for a living is compensation for services. And they've completely ignored the history of it that explains what that is.
It seems like they bring me under Subtitle A from Subtitle C by virtue of the withholding agreement that I signed. So
then they make it
apples and oranges,
generally,
I think.
Well, hey,
we have
hang
a break.
Around. I want to make one comment about what we have to do in reference to the tax.
Sure, right. Bob. If you can hang on, Bob, feel free to do so. This is the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. Joe Bannister, your host, 410-848-9191 is the call-in number. See you after the break.
Join the Cavalcade to Freedom. The Cavalcade backed to constitutional government. Climb on board and do your part to proclaiming liberty throughout the land. Join and support Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. To view the strategic plan, to spread the word, and to get information on joining, go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com or call the fellowship office at 410-857-5444. That's 410-857-5444. To join the Cavalcade to Freedom. America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
It seems these days I'm in a haze and I can't concentrate on things, can't eat or sleep, feel incomplete and kinda scared and creepy. I look over my shoulder lots and shudder when I watch TV. I bite my nails and cuticles and watch my words very carefully. I bite my lip a lot and fidget with the buttons on my blouse. Why? Because there's a communist living in the White House. Why aren't people shocked or something? Why aren't people up in arms? Does anyone read history or see red flags or hear alarms? The streets are filled with deaf and dumb as I squeak like a mouse. There's a communist living in the White House. You may say, do I have any evidence to support my suppositions? His grandparents were socialists. His mother was. His father was a communist. He had Marxist professors. He taught a course in college on Saul Alinsky. He told Joe the Plumber on the campaign trail, spread the wealth, which is a direct quote from the Communist Manifesto written by Karl Marx. He appointed Van Jones to be his green job czar. Van Jones is a purported communist. His church of 20 years, what with Jeremiah Wright preaching, was black liberation theology, which is actually Marxism. Then as soon as he got in office, he had the government take over the banks and the car industry, and now he's trying to jam down our throats socialized medicine and the cap and trade. I mean, how much more proof do you want? Everybody, there's a communist living in the White House. Now what are we going to do about it?
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
The American dream was given birth by Samuel Adams, the father of the American Revolution. The right to freedom, being the gift of God. It is not in the power of man to alienate this gift and voluntarily become a slave. If ye love wealth better than liberty, the tranquility of servitude better than the animating contest of freedom, go home from us in peace. We ask not your counsels or your arms. Crouch down and lick the hands which feed you. Thomas Jefferson wrote to Sam the following tribute. You have proved that it was monarchy, and not merely British monarchy, you opposed. Samuel Adams was not only a son of liberty, he was the father of the American Revolution. For his was the American dream.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave her all. Compassion, She didn't just visit the sick and poor. She moved in with them because they needed help. Mother Teresa couldn't do it all, but she gave it all. Compassion. Pass it on.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Now live from coast to coast and around the globe, more real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. My name is Joe Bannister, your host, agentfortruth.com and freedomabovefortune.com. Our guest is attorney Larry Becraft, and we had Bob from New Mexico who was asking some questions, and Larry had a final thought he wanted to share with Bob in the audience. Larry?
Bob?
Yeah.
You asked a real important question, and it's a kind of a deep and long answer. We've had people in the freedom movement that have gone out and done things pro se. And, you know, even with some of the things that you have said, you know, I can see what you have studied and, you know, how you have, you know, reached certain conclusions based upon what you've studied. And, you know, there's elements in truth of what you've studied and relied upon, and then there's elements that are erroneous. But, you know, there's a lot of things that have gone on in the movement. People were, you know, get a basic understanding of the income tax, and then they come along and go into the courts, and they have a problem, and a lot of adverse precedent has been created. You know, we have a lot of people that have gone to court and raised some of these issues, and the courts have rejected them. And the reason that they have done so is because litigation is real important. And you gotta, when you litigate something, you gotta know what you're litigating, the topic, the legal topic. You gotta know it inwards and outwards and backwards and forwards, and you gotta know it dead cold. And we've just had too much in the way of litigation that's gone on, where people have created a whole lot of adverse precedents, you know, like the courts have come along and in response to some people going into the court pro se, and they say wages are not income. The courts come on and say, you know, just by equal fiat, you know, these litigants say wages are not income, and the courts with equal fiat come back and say, oh no, you're wrong, wages are income, which only creates the next question, well, what are wages? But you know, we've got a lot of adverse precedents out there, and it's been created by a lot of people going to court that's unprepared. My view about what the tax movement needs to do is this. We need to, you know, there's a real need for further education by a lot of people. Education is real important. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, we can't sit there and expect, and I've been involved with this freedom movement for 30 years and more, and, you know, there's this underlying assumption, you know, gee, we got to just bide our time and wait for some great awakening that's going to happen in America. Well, you know, I haven't seen that yet. I haven't seen the political aspects of this movement kind of gel and come together and have an impact. One of the things that can be done, you know, you can engage in litigation, and we can get further down the road, you know, rather than waiting decades for something favorable to come along just because we're hoping that something favorable happens. We need to go on the initiative, but then when we go on the initiative, we got to carefully plan what we're going to do. You know, I think that there's certain key things that need to be done in way of litigation. You got to look for the right court where we can raise issues. We got to, you know, carefully plan who's going to be parties to any litigation, and then do it for the express purpose of, you know, we're not going to do it unless we're 100% certain that we can get the outcome that we want. And that's what it's going to take. And if we do that, you know, litigate some of these important issues, we can get further down the road quicker than this long process of waiting and for, gee, something favorable is going to happen. So I think that there has to be, you know, here you are, you come along and you're battling with your employer. The employment tax issue is something that's nobody has really, you know, in reference to the overall broad movement, nobody's ever really dug into it. You know, everybody sits there and takes a look at 3401 and 3402 of the Internal Revenue Code and, you know, just lives with the broad language that appears there. And they all ignore the history behind withholding, and it's the history that tells you about exactly how it operates. But it's carefully concealed, you know, in reference to the employment taxes, there's stuff that sits there in plain language, tells you how it operates, but it's one gem that's buried in 50 pages of, you know, fluff, and that's the way they hide things in plain sight. So, you know, we absolutely need people to, number one, sit down and to study the tax laws, which is a huge project because, you know, the government's made it deliberately so confusing. And then once we arrive at the conclusions, we got to do something beyond just sitting around and, oh, I think something favorable is going to happen. We absolutely have a requirement on our part to absolutely do something rather than sitting on our hands, which is what the Freedom Movement does.
Mm-hmm. Can you direct?
What were you saying, Bob?
I'm sorry.
What were you saying,
asking,
Bob?
What direction should I go to uncover? I mean, I'm willing to do the work. I've already done quite a bit of work. Where can I go to undo this employment tax?
Well, you know, in reference to the employment taxes, you know, I keep saying, you know, you can get from Joe. Have you got Joe's CD?
No, but I want to get it. Absolutely.
Well, then get it. And, you know, there you have, you know, I sat down and I converted to text the old tax acts. You'll have on that disk the Revenue Act of 1918, which was adopted in 1919. Then you have the Revenue Act of 21, 24, 26, 28, 32, 34, 36, 38, the 39 code, the 54 code, and the 2002 version of the 86 code. All of it's PDF images and word searchable. Then you will have, and I spent a whole lot of time, if you went to the law library, and you could go over there to UNM, you know where the law library is at UNM?
I sure do.
Okay, you know, somebody that's sitting at the base of the Sandia Mountains ought to know where UNM Law Library is.
Yeah, I know.
You don't have, you know, when you go upstairs in the library over there on the federal stuff is once you hit that top level, it's over there on the kind of the right side of it. But, you know, if you go back into the other parts of the library, it seems like to me that they're putting more and more stuff online. There's a lot of books that are no longer there in the law library, but all the federal stuff is over there on the right side. But when you get over there, you will find that you don't have access to these things like the old regulations. It's real difficult to find the old regulations. Well, the easiest way to find the old regulations is to get Joe's disc. And the reason I know that is because I did go to the law libraries that had the old regulations, and I sat out in front of the copying machine, and if you copied just at a dime a pop, you know, which is what it was back in those days, you know, you'd spend $500 just copying the regulations. But, you know, you can have all those regulations on that disc, and they have been converted to the PDF images have been converted to searchable text, so you can sit there and, you know, go through all the old regulations. You got I think you have Regs 33 for the 1913 Act. Then you have Regs 45, Regs 62, Regs 65, 74, you know, all the way up to 101 and 103. They're all on that disk, and the word searchable. And so what I encourage people to do is get from Joe the disk. You sit down and you know, would study the tax laws and, you know, you print out, get a notebook and print out the pages that are, you know, like for withholding. And it'll be surprising when people start studying withholding, you know, the connection to non-resident aliens and foreign corporations. That's all I'm going to say on that point. But just print out all the stuff that relates to withholding and the tax acts, and then dig into the regulations and just print out. You know, there's a lot of reading, but print out, you know, the pages that relate to withholding under the old tax acts. And that'll give you a real good view, the history behind withholding. Then you have to tangle with, you know, the Victory Tax Act and the Current Tax Payment Act. But the answer is in those things. And, you know, I think that if we had a whole lot of people that really understood a specific legal point, we could be an important and powerful force. When I'm in court and I'm sitting there and, you know, the IRS tenders an expert. And you get into the qualifications of these experts. They can't tell you sections of the code. They are masters of the manuals of the IRS. They are not masters of even current provisions of the 86 code. Now, you know, imagine what if we had a whole lot of patriots that were masters of the history of the income tax. Then we could put these people to shame.
Now, is there guidance on Joe's disc to direct me to the regulations there?
Well, what you have on Joe's disc is basically a website.
Okay.
You know, there's an explanation that'll say something like, you know, here's the Revenue Act of 1918, and here are the regulations that go along with it. You know, you
right.
just have a kind of a guide. You pull up this HTML file, but it's all
right.
linked there. You can pull
right.
up the
so,
acts, and you can pull up the regulations, and then you can engage in word searches of all of it. And not only do you have on that disk the acts and the regulations, you have the 1999 version of the regulations. Then you have whole volumes of the statutes at large, you know, about the last 10 or 12 years are on there that are also word searchable, pulled off a government website. You have the derivation tables, you know, where the 54 code sections came from the 39 code and stuff like that.
Right.
But you even have, you know, here we've had this commercial on today, you know, Bill Huff sitting there talking about the Constitution Party and this fellow talking about jurisdiction. You have on that disc a scan of the 1957 report on federal jurisdiction, real important. So I encourage everybody to get from Joe that CD and let's get rolling on studying.
And Bob,
okay,
what you
so
can do the CD is it's like a web, you know, you put it on your computer and it's like a website. There's a narrative,
okay.
and then it will
yeah.
have links that'll just take you right to the document. But as far as mm-hmm. practical terms with what you're dealing with these notices, you know, we can't really address it here. But if you want to send me an email through josephbannister.com
okay.
or freedomabovefortune.com, I could
okay.
talk to you a little bit more in detail. But I would just say
okay.
for everybody. You know, if you're going to go and put your name in the public record and saying, you know, waving this big flag that's saying, I'm going to assert my rights, you're going to become a target.
Right.
And you want to make sure that you've done your homework first and you're really comfortable with everything before you go overt, as we say, and decide that you're going to go toe-to-toe with the IRS. And so I'd say the one mistake you've made, Bob, is just, you know, going toe-to-toe with the IRS without having all your other ducks in a row. So now we have mm-hmm. to maybe spend some time with you just mm-hmm. person-to-person about
sure.
your own personal circumstances, and we don't want to be airing that over the airwaves.
Right.
I understand. Yeah. Okay. So
okay.
I telegraphed to them that I have an incomplete understanding by filling in a 4852 and just citing 3121A and 3401A.
Yeah, the problem is that I had to learn the hard way. You know, the IRS not only doesn't obey the law, but, I mean, they're out there hunting for people that are pointing out particular aspects of the law because mm-hmm. they can tell them that you think for yourself, and they don't want anybody in America thinking for themselves. And
yeah.
so you really have to be a lot more strategic and shrewd, frankly, mm-hmm. you know, in to mm-hmm. deal with these people. So
right.
go ahead and
okay.
send me an email, and we'll try to deal with your personal circumstances. We can't go back
okay.
in history, but
right.
we should be able to help you in that manner. Okay, Bob?
Okay, I'll do that, Joe. Okay.
Okay,
thank you, Larry.
Thanks for the call.
Okay.
Wish you success. Now, Joe, can we get... Can I make a suggestion here?
Sure.
We only have 30 minutes left, or less than 30 minutes, but one of the things that I think is real important, and you mentioned we'd discuss it during the first part of the program, are the bad arguments that are out there, the flaky ideas, and how we got to get people away from those and into the meat.
Yeah, and I'd like to jump right into that. You're right, we don't have that much time left, but I'd just like to start or introduce it by saying everybody needs to remember, okay, or keep in mind, we're dealing with the IRS. They're about breaking legs, you know, no mercy, collecting all the revenue they can, as Larry said before. So keep that always at the forefront of your mind before you decide to take any action or any inaction, you know, changing your lifestyle or the way you deal with the IRS, take it slow, because people jump out. We're Americans. We think we have rights and they'll be respected. The law will be respected. But the fact is, it's just not true. These agencies don't obey the law. So you need to act accordingly. So anyway, we've got a break coming up. But when we come back, we'll let Larry just have the floor and talk about these arguments that really get people into hot water. It's the Freedom Above Fortune radio show, 410-848-9191. We'll be right back after the break.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
This is Randall Yearout on Leaders. Our government leaders swear an oath to support and defend the Constitution of the United States before they're allowed to exercise the powers of their offices. This oath automatically requires those office holders to act as a check on usurped or abused power among those within any branch of the government. Why is it, then, that when the Congress assumes for itself powers reserved by the Constitution to the states or the people, the President doesn't object with a defense of the Constitution and refuse to execute unlawful legislation? Or when the President creates Soviet-style czars to violate the public rights, why doesn't the Congress speak up? Or when the court begins striking down the laws of the Union states in violation of the public rights and in favor of international norms, why don't the other two branches bring misdemeanor charges against those offending judges? It appears that our leaders in government think that a non-intervention policy on another branch's behavior is more virtuous than executing the oath they took to support and defend the Constitution. James Madison said in Federalist Paper 51 that if men were angels, no government would be necessary, and that if angels were our governors, no constitution would be necessary. Our constitution is necessary, however, and our public officials are proving to us the very reason this is so. The constitution outlines the restricted powers we, the people, gave to our governors. For our leaders to disobey them is to break the supreme law of the land, which is to be dealt with by impeachment and removal from office. I think the only way to effectively ensure the reinstatement of our American form of law and government is to replace nearly every last congressman with one who will honor his oath.
This constitutional message has been brought to you by the members of the Constitution Party. Visit us at www.constitutionparty.com.
I will not be taking any questions. As of 10 a.m. this morning, the U.S. Treasury Department has issued a full recall of all 776 billion pieces of U.S. currency in circulation. I know this must seem like a blow coming on the heels of this morning's announcement that our federal budget deficit has passed the $800 billion mark. But regrettably, these particular bills were printed with dye containing toxins that, while completely safe at this moment, will become extremely deadly Friday at exactly 12 noon. As a result, we need to act quickly. Okay, tomorrow all Americans will receive a bag like this in the mail. Do not, under any circumstances, attempt to burn or shred the money yourself. The federal government are the only ones that can destroy the money, as we are the only ones with the proper facilities to do so.
This is a massive recall.
We understand that this recall will be hard on U.S. citizens who will have no more money, but we assure you, if you work hard, you will be eventually able to earn it back.
This is in the best interest of the American people.
This dye poisoning causes your internal organs to rot from within and is really painful until you puke up your guts and die. There really is no time to think about this. Just listen to me and send in the money. Thank you.
Healing back the layers every day with Frank Turner.
Husbands, have you ever worried about the risks to your wife's health from the birth control method she's using? Why not learn a natural method that's 99% effective and has no risks to her? You can learn natural family planning in English or Spanish through classes or home study. Search for a class at the Couple to Couple League's website at ccli.org or call 800-745-8252.
Amen.
America. Born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
I could have a heart-to-heart with my dad.
I could have a heart-to-heart with my mom.
I'd probably talk about girls.
We'd probably talk about girls.
Anything. Boys, school, clothes.
You'd be amazed at what they'll talk about if you give them the chance.
If I had a heart-to-heart with my dad.
If it were real heart-to-heart, I'd tell my parents what I'm going through.
I'd probably talk to him about growing up.
I'd probably tell my dad that I wish we'd do more stuff together.
I don't think it has to be a heart-to-heart. I just want to talk.
Give your family everything. Give them your time.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting. Now live from coast to coast and around the globe. More real talk, the kind you want, on Liberty Works Radio Network.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to the Freedom Above Fortune radio show. I am Joe Bannister, your host, freedomabovefortune.com and agentfortruth.com. Guest is attorney Larry Beecraft. We only have this one segment left, so Larry, I want to just give the floor over to you, and you'll hear the bumper music just like I do, so just take us right up till the end. Maybe give me 30 seconds to say goodbye.
I'll do that, right, Joe. And you can chime in anytime you want, but I've got too many decades under my belt with the freedom movement. And I've seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And there's a lot of ugly in the movement. You know, we have, you know, I think they're, if they're not outright con men, liars, and thieves, and crooks, they're working for the government. One of the, you know, they fall into one of those two categories. And you, we have in this freedom movement, you, we got people that are coming into it that are looking for a solution to a personal problem, or they see what's going on in America, they want to climb on board and be, do something productive. And yet, some of the first people that these these new initiates, the people that are coming into the freedom movement, the first people that they encounter are too many liars, con men, and thieves. Let me give you an example. Back in early 2008, Cryer and I found out and heard about this guy by the name of Dr. Sam Kennedy. He rolled in out of the blue. Nobody knows who he is. You know, we're convinced that Dr. Sam Kennedy is a nom de guerre, a fake name. Even he is concealing his true identity. People have looked in to try to find out who he was, and they think he's a defrocked dentist. But in any event, he got out and started promoting his message to America. What he had, these seminars that he sponsored, the topics would be UCC and the bankruptcy of the United States. And, you know, then he got a whole bunch of people involved in the 1099 OIDs. All of that was, you know, if he's somebody that was just misled, all he did is he went out and surveyed what was popular discussion among people and mastered, you know, the popular discussion, even though it was completely baseless. And then he just continued promoting it. And when he got around to promoting the 1099 OID tax returns, he attracted a whole bunch of people that just wanted to get money from the IRS. And so here we have somebody that was associated with the, allegedly associated with the freedom movement. I think he's working for the government, but is encouraging people to do something stupid and baseless, and it gave the movement a black eye. And I guarantee you there are people that came into, you know, the 10 years ago, the redemption process was hot. It was completely baseless. You know, recapture your straw man, and once you do that, you can write checks on the, hot checks on a closed account at the Treasury of the United States. Wow! People got indicted for that, and people got indicted for doing what Sam Kennedy proposed. And then Sam Kennedy, about a year ago, came out with, a little more than a year ago, came out with this, the Restore America Plan, the acronym of which is TRAP, TRAP. And he came to this conclusion. He convinced a whole bunch of people, gee, you know, all we have to do is write letters to the, governors of the states and say we're taking over and these guys are going to be thrown out of office if they don't work with us. And the IRS was going to be out of business by March 31st of 2010. The Army is behind us. We got 88 nations that are supporting us. You know, all of that was a pack of lies. and it had a whole lot of detrimental consequences. Then, following following Dr. Sam Kennedy, there was apparently some type of a coup. I didn't follow closely what happened, but suddenly Dr. Sam Kennedy was no longer in control of this organization that he built, and now you have Tim Turner. Now, Tim Turner's claim to fame was that he was filing these maritime liens that were the silver bullet. Well, he did it. He's from Alabama, and he filed some of these maritime liens in a bankruptcy case down in, I think, Dothan, Alabama. And he went around parading, oh, you know, we did this and we did that. You know, we prevailed, and this is the silver bullet. No, in the bankruptcy case where he talks about he filed maritime liens against the judge and all these other lawyers and everybody else, he claims that he prevailed. You know, when you go over and take a look at that case, and I have done so because in the federal system everything's electronic now. All you have to do is sign up for Pacer and you can go anywhere. You know, it's 8 cents a page for what you download and you pay for that. But you can any case in America today in the federal system, you can pull up. Tim Turner got sanctioned for doing that, but of course he ignores all of that, and now he's in control of the Tim Turner organization, and he's running around and using a man by the name of Winston Shrout, who's, you know, started the 1099 OID income tax returns, which, you know, is going to get, there's a whole bunch of people that have already been indicted, and there are going to be a whole bunch more people that are going to get indicted because he filed these 1099 OID tax returns that are utterly baseless. But, you know, that is, you know, I've just mentioned Dr. Sam Kennedy and Tim Turner as two charlatans and con men and liars and thieves that have gone through the freedom movement that have done substantial damage. And there's a whole lot more people beyond just Tim Turner and Dr. Sam Kennedy that are out there creating problems. But, you know, every day I run across somebody that, you know, is asserting some argument like the Uniform Commercial Code or the bankruptcy of the United States. And all of this is just stuff that's been invented out of whole cloth. And the whole purpose, the reason why people are advocating it, in my view, is to just mislead people. Now, haven't you encountered a whole bunch of arguments that float around the movement that are utterly baseless, that will only get people into trouble?
Yeah, I have. It's amazing how these kind of people are able to get out there and get just huge followings, and just people do exactly what they tell them, and they end up just getting in a world of hurt, I mean, that they can't get out of. And I don't know why they're not discovered earlier in the process, but they must, you know, they must be promising something that people want, and they just pay attention to the promise and not the bare bones of what these people are offering.
That is true, and it hurts the movement. It gives the movement a black eye. You know, today, here it is May 21st, there's some preacher that's running around talking about, you know, the whole bunch of Christians are going to be raptured today. That isn't going to happen, but it's going to give our religion, Joe, Christianity, a black eye. Well, similarly, we have a bunch of people out here running around that, you know, I guess they're trying to make a living selling trash, legal trash inside the movement. And as they're doing it, they're just absolutely misleading people. And I have spent a career, decades, you know, not pursuing something that's fruitful, but trying to pull people's, pull them out of the pit in which they've dug themselves because they followed the bad advice of a lot of these gurus out here. You know, you've got these arguments like the Uniform Commercial Code, you know, this bankruptcy of the United States based on HCR 192. None of that's true. You know, the HCR 192 is a resolution that Congress passed back in the early 30s, whereby they allegedly banished the use of gold as a medium of exchange. Well, you know, that isn't the bankruptcy of the United States. That's a change in the monetary system of this country as a result of HCR 192. But people come along and they don't even read HCR 192. They don't even understand that HCR 192 is no longer in effect. But they'll listen to these con men like Roger Elvick sit up there and come up with all these wild tales. You know, this was the bankruptcy of the United States. you know, as a result of the bankruptcy of the United States, a nom de guerre for every American has been created, which is your name in caps, and you use uniform commercial procedures so that your living human being, your soul, you can, you know, reclaim your straw man, and once you reclaim your straw man, you can access the private side of some account that, with the Treasury Department, where you can, you'll have access to huge amounts of money, you know, and all sorts of promoters are out there. You know, it started off $600,000. Some people have said a couple of $1 million, and but once you get to recapture your straw man, now you can access this account at the Treasury Department and start writing checks to get things. And that is very attractive to a lot of people, but you know, it's utterly baseless. It's completely invented. It's false. And yet we have the innocents out here, the gullible people will fall for that and then get themselves into deep trouble, and it doesn't do them or us any good for this type of stuff to go on.
But that's the key, isn't it? I mean, here we are trying to encourage people to study, to get reading materials, and you know, take some time out of their busy lives to actually learn. And these other people are saying, hey, you know, if you access this account, it's a quick way to $1 million. Well,
yeah.
You know, which way are most people going to go? But yet it's a false promise, and often it's going to lead to a criminal prosecution. I mean, in my case, I legitimately sought a refund, or I helped a client seek a refund, and I got prosecuted for that. I was acquitted because I showed that it was a legitimate request. But the fact is that if you actually have an illegitimate request, which a lot of this stuff is based on, straw man and UCC and the big account that you want to tap into, you can bet that many of those people are going to be indicted and prosecuted and convicted because they cannot explain, other than some cockamamie story, why they wanted to get $1 million out of the feds.
Right,
and,
right.
And they're gonna crash and burn. And we're trying to warn people before they take those steps.
You know, the movement has to present a beautiful face to the rest of America. And in fact, liberty and freedom is beautiful. It's breathtaking. And that should be the message that the freedom movement presents to the rest of America. You know, our message of liberty and freedom stands in sharp contrast to, you know, the other side, which is promoting slavery and, you know, the destruction of your life and complete control by the government. Which is better, liberty and freedom or slavery? And most people are going to take liberty and freedom. You know, the exception being those that believe in Barack Obama. That elected him for president. They think that now that Barack Obama's been president for a while, you know, gee, they don't have to pay their utility bills, their car payments, and their mortgage payments. You know, but we represent liberty and freedom. Our message has to be that when we reach out and try to get, you know, this movement absolutely needs to turn into a powerful force for liberty and freedom. It's an attractive message, and we've got to police our own ranks to make sure that the beautiful message of this movement gets out there. And if it gets out there, we're going to have a large number of people that are going to be on our side that can be a positive force for favorable change in this country. But it won't happen when you're, you know, running around and promoting these wild and crazy ideas that you know, are going to result in ruin for people that implement these types of programs. And that sends a message to the rest of America, the very people we want to attract. The message they get is, hey, don't get involved with these crackpots and crazies. You know, these are the guys that are standing out there on I-40 in West Memphis, Arkansas, shooting cops. And that's the message that we saw in the last week on some CBS program. You know, that isn't the freedom movement. And yet that's exactly what too many people are doing inside the freedom movement, spreading the message of bad arguments to make us all look bad.
Well,
you know, I can list a whole bunch of people that are out there engaged in this process right now. But people need people need to understand that these promoters are dangerous.
Well, we do have to all, band together and recognize that we do, as you say, the beautiful face of the freedom movement. I mean, we have a role to play. We have a reputation to preserve, and we need to advocate for the truth and not just making a buck, but, you know, getting the truth out there, reminding people about what their rights are, about the history of the income tax and our rights and our Constitution. But I guess we're about out of time, Larry, so I thank you so much for spending both hours with us. We were able to get into some very detailed issues. And
I've enjoyed it, Joe.
Archive the show and have it be shared with people for here on out. So you have a great weekend, Larry. Great weekend to all the listeners, and we'll see you next week.
Is Liberty Works Radio Network enlightening you to the real problems we face in our constitutional republic? Has it helped you to better understand what has to be done to save America from becoming a third world nation? If so, do your part in spreading this voice of truth and enlightenment to your fellow Americans. Join the Liberty Works Radio Network Fellowship. Go to www.libertyworksradionetwork.com for details.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
Hey, everybody. Gather around. I'm here to give you anything you like. You want free college, energy, mortgages, whatever you like. You have come to the right place. Why? I'll tell you why. Who can take your money?
Who can take your money?
With a twinkle in their eye.
A twinkle in their eye.
Take it all away and give it to some other guy. The government.
The government.
The government can.
The government.
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the sunrise?
Who can tax the trees?
Who can tax the trees?
Let you run a business and collect up all the fees. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make to pay for all solutions, healthcare, climate change, pollution, throw away the Constitution. And who can give a bailout?
Who can give a bailout?
Tell us to behave.
Tell us to behave.
And make the founding fathers roll over in the grave. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government.
And the government can, cause they mix it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
The government takes everything we make. They're power hungry and malicious. Their economics are fictitious. Soon we'll have to eat our dishes.
Delicious.
Oh, who can be a failure? Instead of getting fired, hey, we'll give ourselves a raise. The government.
The government.
Oh, the government can.
The government can.
And the government can, cause they make it up with lies and make it all taste good.
Make it all taste good.
And your Uncle Sam can, cause he mixes it with lies and makes it all taste good.
Makes it all
and I feel so good, cause the government says I should.
America, born to freedom. The Liberty Revolution is on. Liberty Works Radio Network. Truth in broadcasting.
In 1987, some inner-city first graders were promised a college education. Now, this promise didn't come from a wealthy corporation. It came from Oral Lee Brown, who saved a large portion of her modest income every year for these children.
She told Ms. Brown, you can't do everything I said, no, but we need to do more.
And she did more by sending 19 kids to college, helping others, passing.